the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Welcome you to the What Are You Reading comic book show's spoiler cast of Marvel's latest creation, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Ant-Man. I am Surfer, joined by Jordan Cobb. How are you, Jordan?
I am doing fantastic right now.
So we're going to talk about Ant-Man. Both Hank Pym and Scott Lang. Try to give you a little history and talk about the movie. And this is going to be spoiled. We're going to spoil the movie. So if you haven't watched the movie, you might want to hold off on listening to this until you've seen the movie and come back. And if you know you need incentive to go see the movie, maybe you want to listen to it. You know we're going to tell you everything that happened. And then you know you can go see it. So that's up to you.
Good choice, man. I mean, we're gonna get into the nitty gritty about the incredible shrinking man of Marvel talent here, who has tales to astonish. So, let's get ready.
So, this is the 12th movie of Marvel Cinematic Universe from their studio, and this is also the end of their Phase 2. You know, back in 2008 when they did that first Iron Man, you know, we just thought they were doing a movie. And they wasn't even quite sure if they would get to this point either, you know. But the response to that was overwhelming and it kickstarted the studio towards a path of making movies that interconnect and exist in the same universe, you know. So you have soldiers and gods and talking raccoons. And you have them teaming up to take on villains that no one person can handle. Which, of course, is called the Avengers. And then, when that wasn't enough, they took you into outer space. Took you to far off galaxies and showed that they could handle that too. But now that we've been out in space, we've been in realms of gods, men out of time, so on, men of technology. Marvel didn't forget everybody, you know, and they're rolling along. And so it was just a matter of time that once the Avengers movie was done, people was asking, you know what they was asking, Joan, where is the original Avengers? You know, you got some that wasn't there when the Avengers were first created, but where's Ant-Man? You know? Where is Ant-Man?
Yeah, where is he? Could he be behind me? Is he at my feet? Or is he off doing science?
And then, there's been different variations of Ant-Man throughout the decades. So it was a question of who they were going to go with. The original Ant-Man, whose name is Hank Pym, Let me tell you a little bit about him. Hank Pym made his first appearance in Tales to the Astonish 27 in January 1962. He made his first appearance as Ant-Man in Tales to the Astonish number 35 in September 1962. He was created by Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack Kirby. And they're basically responsible for most of the Marvel Universe in the early days. And you know Larry Lieber, right?
Yes, I do.
And you know he's Stan Lee's brother.
Yes.
Okay. So, of course, Hank Pym remained Ant-Man until Tales to Astonish number 49, November of 1963, in which he changed his personality and became Giant Man. Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout the years, Hank Pym had different variations of, you know, he became Goliath, he became Yellow Jacket. And, you know, Hank Pym, he's been one of the dumped on characters of the Marvel Universe throughout the decades.
Hank Pym's kind of, you know, he's got a bit of a complicated history, to put it in a way.
And, you know, we won't get into it, but, you know, the man has a stain on his legacy that, you know.
Couple stains.
There have been people who have done some worse things and been forgiven. But
these two things that Pym's done kind of come back to
haunt him all the time. And people don't let it go.
No.
Now, the other Ant-Man, Scott Lang, how he became Ant-Man was the Ant-Man stole an Ant-Man suit and shrinking gas canisters from Dr. Henry Pym. The original Ant-Man ordered to save the life of his daughter by breaking into a factory where the heart specialist was being held.
Erica Sondheim.
Right. Pym gave Lang permission to keep the uniform and supplied gas after Lang proved himself willing to use his powers on the side of right and law. Okay, so his first appearance is in Avengers 181 as Scott Lang.
Hello, hi, it's 1930. Can we have a little words and clothes and Jenny Airplane back?
I am deeply embarrassed right now.
Tick tick. And his first appearance as Ant-Man is in Marvel Premiere 47, April of 1997.
Yes.
Now, Ant-Man was created by David Michelinie and John Byrne. That's who created Scott Lang.
I'm very well aware.
But we're teaching the people.
I know, and that's what's fun about this. That people get to know the history. It's awesome.
Now, there's a few other things I didn't look up, but I will mention real quick. Scott Lang has died once and was replaced as Ant-Man in a more recent history, but was brought back to life and was brought back and given the Ant-Man mantle, which he's been a part of since, what would you say, the Future Foundation, which was volume 2, number 1.
Yes.
And so, of course, when Marvel decided to make a movie, they decided to go with Scott Lang, but still have Hank Pym involved.
And, also led to a current ongoing series with Scott Lang.
Which you can pick up now.
Yeah, in which he's relocated to Miami.
And, you know, one of the important characters we mentioned was his daughter, Cassie Lang. Which she becomes a hero in her own right, and she's had tragedy happen to her. And she's back. Also, she died once, but she's back too, you know, in comics. When you die, it's always a possibility to bring you back. So, death doesn't always have a sway on things.
Yeah, it's something that runs through the Lang family now.
So, and then what would you say the difference between the two Ant-Men?
I would say, honestly, the difference is, really, I want to focus on Scott Lang to highlight the differences. Scott Lang is a man that very well started off flawed. I mean, he's a good family man, cared for him, but always would revert back to crime. That's really the best thing that gave him success, which was his crime skills, his expertise at thieving and cat burglary. So that was a bit of his flaw. And yet when he saw his daughter Cassie being sick and almost not being able to see her, he took it upon himself to use those same skills to go and try and save her. Whereas with Hank Pym, he's a brilliant man. Hank Pym's a great guy. He's smart, but there's a bit of a there's a flaw to his genius.
Well, okay, so
the flaw in his genius is that he cares maybe a bit too much. I mean, he created Ultron, but that's ultimately his worst mistake, next to incidents that have happened with Janet Van Dyne's wife. And really, Hank Pym, and really the Pym particles have caused Pym to really have a strain on his mental faculties, and it leads him down a road of regretfulness and almost being a little bit hot-headed that strive him to be a better person than he was before.
Yeah, okay, Hank Pym, he's considered one of the top five or six smartest people in the Marvel Universe. Like, yes. He's right under, like, Reed Richards and
Tony Stark, T'Challa,
Doom,
Doctor Strange.
No, Strange is not on the... He's not like a top fiver. He's a pretty smart guy, but...
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, Hank Pym is way, way up there.
And, you know, Scott Lang isn't... He has expertise himself, but he's not on that level of intelligence.
He's of course, not the guy you go to for your algebra homework.
Well, not... No, he probably does... No algebra. I'm just saying he's smarter than the average person, and he's just not that upper echelon level that Hank Pym was.
And the difference in the intellect is that Hank Pym sometimes lets it get to his mind and it affects him.
Well,
but Scott Lang, he takes it in strides. It's not overly driving him down the same road as Hank Pym's intelligence did for himself.
Well, also, the Pym Pargos have taken a physical toll on Hank Pym. Mainly his heart.
Yeah.
Because in addition to shrinking as Ant-Man, he's also grown in size as Giant Man and Colossus. And then as Yellowjacket, he's done both. And, you know, for a while he couldn't do it, and then he found a way to do it again. And when he fought crime just as Hank Pym, but now he basically wears the Yellow Jacket costume, but he doesn't go by that name. So
no, he doesn't.
And you know, there's been we're not gonna get into it, but there's been other
aliases.
No, not aliases. What I'm trying to say is there's been other alternate versions of Ant-Man throughout the different Marvel universes, but the one we're concentrating on is from the 616 universe. That is the main Marvel universe of which most creation comes from. You know, that's the one that was started in 1961 and been around until recently when it got destroyed at the beginning of Secret Wars. So that's a little bit of history of the Ant-Mans. And other, you know, Hank Pym has also given those particles to other people like the Wasp, you know, his wife, girlfriend at the time, Janet Van Dyne. There was another Hawkeye, Clint Barton. He took on the mantle of Giant Man at one time. And there was also a character named Black Goliath after Hank Pym stopped being Goliath. And you know, so there's been and Scott Lang's daughter, of course, she used the Pym particles to become Stature, who's part of the Young Avengers.
Yes, and a very fascinating character in of her own right.
So we're here to talk about the movie, though.
Yeah, the recently released movie, which was directed by Peyton Reed and written based off a story by Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish, by Wright Cornish, Adam McKay, and star Paul Rudd.
Yes, I should have had that page ready of the cast. I'm slipping.
I do. I can list it off real quick.
I can do it.
Okay.
Just give me a second. So, but you've seen the movie and you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite well, despite some of my problems with it.
Oh, so now you got problems. So I got to listen to your problems.
I got to listen to your problems every Sunday.
But this is not Sunday, and we're talking about it's a movie. So you got problems with the movie. So I guess I got to listen to them. Yeah, okay. I see where this is going. But that's good. That's cool. You know, your man speaks your mind. Nothing I can do about that. Not yet. I haven't found a way to do anything about that, but, you know.
And you still won't.
Don't underestimate my powers. Okay? Don't underestimate the powers.
I constantly do. I have the list in front of me.
I got it, too. So, the main cast is Paul Rudd as Scott Lang. Michael Douglas plays Hank Pym, Dr. Hank Pym. Evangeline Lilly plays Hope Van Dyne, who's his daughter in the movie. Corey Stahl plays Darren Cross / Yellow Jacket. He's the villain. Bobby Cannavale is a character named Paxton. We get an Avenger of Anthony Mackie as Sam Wilson, the Falcon. One of Jordan's crushes, Judy Greer, is in this movie as Maggie Lang, who's Scott Lang's ex-wife. Abby Ryder Forston plays Cassie Lang, which is the catalyst of this particular movie, or Scott Lang's catalyst, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have other characters. Haley Atwell shows up, T.I., Wood Harris. John Slattery reprises his role as older Howard Stark. Haley Lovett plays the Wasp, which you don't see her face. And, you know, going from there, we're not going to list everybody, but those are the main players. Okay?
That's who you need to know is in this movie.
Alright, so, now it's time to spoil the movie. Talk about it in depth.
Yeah. Let's get to it.
Point out some Easter eggs while we're at it, you know?
Yeah.
So the movie starts off in 1989. You know, in the past, you see a building being built in the middle of Washington that we know now is called the Triskelion, which is the headquarters for the now destroyed but rebuilt SHIELD. Okay, that was the main headquarters. You know, kind of like Langley, where the CIA, you know, is held, right?
Yes.
And in the walls of that, we see a meeting between Hank Pym and some of the founding members of SHIELD, Peggy Carter and, I hate blanking on names, Stark.
Yeah, Howard Stark.
And Hank Pym has a problem because his creation, which he calls Pym Particles, you know, SHIELD wants this creation because they want to use as his weapons. You know, they want to shrink men down, use them behind enemy lines. And Pym knows that that's dangerous. And in the wrong hands, that could cause chaos in this world. So he basically walks away from SHIELD and starts his own company. And, you know, everybody thinks, you know, maybe he's a threat. And they're like, no, as long as you leave him alone, shouldn't be a problem. Now we shoot to the present where we meet Scott Lang, and he's already in prison serving time for a burglary he did, and he's about to get out. He gets released. He's done his time. He meets up with Michael Pena, who was his cellmate in prison, who picks him up. You had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, the character's name, Luis.
Luis, yes. And, you know, now he has to get back on his feet so he can do right by his daughter and take care of her. But, you know, when you got a criminal record, you can't find work these days. And he can't even keep a job at Baskin Robbins. You know, they find out he was a con. They let him go from serving ice cream to people who are asking for hamburgers in an ice cream joint.
Yeah, well, you know, Baskin Robbins knows everything.
And so he's like, he doesn't want to go down the road of crime, but you know, he's being given limited options. You know, he goes to see his daughter. They're like, you know, you shouldn't, you can't see her. You're not even paying child support. Don't come by here till you get your life straight. So now, you know, people are telling him about a tip for a job. You know, they can do this. It'll pay off for him. So he's desperate at this point. He says, okay, so what's the tip? And they explain to him about this old guy who has a safe and there's something valuable in his safe and he won't be home. We can go and we can sneak. You can sneak in, get into the safe, steal what's in there, and we can be paid. Sounds simple enough, but he doesn't realize he's being manipulated because Hank Pym, he has a problem of his own. I'm about to backtrack.
Yeah.
The company he started, the Pym Technologies, at this point, he's no longer running. He's not in charge. His protege, played by Corey Stahl, runs the company. And they've had a falling out over the years because Corey Stahl wanted this Pym particle so he could make money. And Hank Pym always denied that. You know, that Ant-Man costume and the Pym particle existed. And that kind of drove a wedge between them. Now, I know you got a problem with Corey Stahl as the villain in this, right, correct?
Well, see, my thing is, this relates to what really happens later in the movie, but I feel like he's a bit of an underdeveloped villain.
See? Yeah, now... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
See, my problem is, later in the movie, they try to explain how the Pym particles have been changing him. How, you know, all the exposure and stress of it is altering his mind. You know, brain chemistry and stuff.
My
problem is, we already see him being that evil at the start. So it's really not much of a transition. That it feels like he's just an evil guy who keeps being evil. It doesn't work like that.
Well, my whole thing is, one, he doesn't even come across as evil. He's just being a jerk. And his motivation, he's like, he is definitely the weakest villain they've come up with. You know, a lot of people criticize that Marvel movies, that their villains aren't strong or developed or just plot points. And sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. But in the case of Darren Cross, the other villains we've seen in other movies, either you know their motivation or you can see their point of view on things.
Yeah, but again, it seems like that. Well, also the bit with the goat was just trying a bit much.
But you can't understand because he, I mean, okay, they state that. Darren Cross was taken as this man's protege.
The son that Pym never had.
Right. So because he didn't want to share one technology with him, he loses it to this point where now he's just determined. He thinks he's been shit on. I mean, that to me is just weak motivation. And look, if you know, the best person to compare. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I also agree with that. I also agree.
Okay,
with
the
that.
Best person to compare him to is Obadiah Stane from the first Iron Man movie.
That's true. I mean, it seems very clear Corey Stahl's having fun in this role.
Well, we're not criticizing his acting, you know.
I know, but I just wish that fun that he was having kind of translated into his performance.
Now, what I was saying about Obadiah Stane, like you could understand his motivations. It's like, okay, he's running his company because, you know, Tony Stark, he may have been a genius, but he didn't really put any effort to the company. And the company's there to make money. And they've always made their money on weapons and so, you know, so forth. And You know, Tony Stark was in his way of making the money that he wanted to make. So, even though Obadiah Stane is also a jerk, you understand that motivation, you know?
Yeah, no, you do. With Cross, it's really underdeveloped.
Yeah, and so Cross is on the verge of creating his own shrinking particle, so he can make a weaponized suit called the Yellow Jacket. Yes. That he can sell to anybody who can afford it. And, you know, he's... Well, not just the highest, but he was going to sell to a lot of people. And it would be like, okay, yeah, if with the Yellow Jacket, you know, it'll keep us safe and all. We'll have soldiers and nobody will be killed anymore. And that's... Never believe that if we can have this, then nobody will die on the battlefield. Because that's not the point of war. Point of war is for people to die. So never believe that hype. But so he's close. He can shrink down inorganic matter, but he can't shrink organic matter. And they do explain like what the pin particles do. How did they state it, Jordan? It decreases the mass between particles.
Yes, it decreases
the distance.
Yeah, it decreases the distance. And really, the PEM particles as they've been described over the years is really taking all the distance between mass and what is the other thing it takes?
Energy? No, not energy, huh?
Okay, hold on. I'm stupid. I gotta look this up. I'm cheating. Okay. The PIM particles. They are able to change the size of, the PIM particles enable mass to be stunted or gained from an alternate dimension, thereby changing the size of himself or other beings or objects.
Okay. So.
I used to know that off the top of my head. I don't know what the hell just happened to me.
Right. So when he shrinks a living person, you know, they shrink, but they don't keep their form and size. And they just become a glob of gloop.
And and that also could happen when one goes subatomic.
So now Henry Pym knows that he needs to stop this because this is going to cause chaos. This is worst nightmare come true. So him and his daughter, who's working for the company but has come back to her father because she knows that this is a disaster waiting to happen. And so they're plotting to get to destroy the technology, destroy all the information before it can get out there to, you know, enemies of whoever, you know. Because, like I said, you got people running around able to shrink. It could cause chaos on a global scale that you just unheard of. So, but Hank Pym, he can't put the suit on himself because the physical toll of wind over the years has gotten to him. He doesn't want his daughter to do it because of something we'll get into later. So he picks out Scott Lang as somewhat of a patsy, but he also sees something noble about Scott Lang, and he figures if he can get Scott Lang on his side, that Scott will help him.
Yeah.
So
he believes in him.
Right. So getting back to this theft. Scott goes through the theft, you know, he sneaks into the house, he shows how smart he is and how skilled he is as a criminal, and he gets past things that, you know, the average criminal wouldn't have gotten past. But he
if they didn't have the same amount of degree smarts that Scott has, such as getting past the thumbprint and the very, very old safe that Pym keeps in his basement.
And so when he gets into the safe, all he sees is a suit, and he thinks, where's the money or where's the technology? But he takes the suit anyway. So curiosity gets the best of him. He puts the suit on. He just thinks it's a biker suit. Well, after he puts it on, he inadvertently activates it, and he shrinks down to the size of an ant. At which he goes through a quick adventure of, now he's in a world where, you know, now this is part of the impressive part of the movie is the, you know, the perspective they show you when he's like a 6-inch person compared to the rest of the world. Because now we've all killed bugs and mice and stuff like that, but
and burned many, many ants with a magnifying glass.
And you know, you start to realize the horror they live in, because we got these, they got giants always trying to take their lives from them. So you imagine yourself being that small, and that would be horrifying. You know, there's been
that'd be horrible. Yeah, that'd be terrible.
Do you remember a TV show where these people landed on this planet and they were 6 inches tall, and they had to hide from the population who was freaking giants? This was a show back in the 60s. You probably never seen it.
Well, what's the name of it?
You know what? I can't think of the name offhand. It might have been Land of the Giants. Let's see if I can look that up. It was an interesting TV show, because, you know, if these people got captured, of course they would have been experimented on by the it was called Land of the Giants. It came out between 1968 and 1970. You could probably find it on YouTube if you ever curious to look at it. So this group of people, of course, they're always in danger. They're always trying to hide from the giants. Anyway, getting back to the movie. So now he's 6 inches tall, and he's going through experience, because, you know, he can stepped on, he's falling through holes, he's ended up in places that
you shouldn't.
Not shouldn't, but, you know, it's a danger to him. But one of the things he doesn't realize is, in this suit, even though he's now shrunk down, he still has his strength and abilities of a normal sized person. So it wouldn't be as easy to step on him as you think, you know, because he would be strong enough to push a person off of him. Now, because he still has his weight and his mass, even though he's now a lot smaller. Now, some people have pointed out that there's an inconsistency in that, because, like, he has his weight, but, like, the first thing he's in is water, and the water's able to, like, push him around like it's nothing. Like, he's in an ocean. He's inside of a tub. Yeah. And Hank Pym has talked to him the whole time, you know, because he wants him to get good at this suit so he can use him to do this heist and destroy all the Yellow Jacket and the technology. You got any thoughts before I go on?
Really, I think it just operates as well as it does in the comics, in all honesty. Right. The shrinking.
So, you know,
that's just me. Other people gonna have different views, but again, it's the sort of thing I've been used to. I'm not sure if this is coming from people who might not be that familiar with Ant-Man, or have only experienced Ant-Man, the character, through this latest movie.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it really didn't bother me. I mean, there is always some sort of inconsistency in something like this.
But the thing is,
you gotta know how to sell it well and how to really bring it across to the audience.
Yeah, it's comic books. Don't try to overthink it.
You see, exactly. That's kind of my point. I don't subscribe to the whole thing. By the way, this is something I've always hated. Turn your brain off. No, I'm sorry. I hate that.
You don't have to turn your brain off. Don't always try to add in real world physics to everything. You know, it's a fantasy.
And I'm agreeing with that. Look, I'm saying keep your brain on, but, you know, there are some things should have fun with, and that's one of the things I had fun with, which was that in the comics. Again, it didn't overly bother me because I'm a bit too familiar with it and all the times I've seen it kind of be inconsistent in its ways in the books.
So after he, you know, gains his size, you know, he doesn't want anything to do with the suit, so he takes it back, and he's caught this time, you know, by the police. And by being caught and being an ex-con, now he's, you know, he's looking at some real time. And the person, one of the people that wants to put him away is his ex-wife's fiance, played by Bobby Cannavale, who's a cop.
Yeah.
And him and his partner, Wood Harris, you know, they're like, oh, this guy's a loser. You know.
No, they're not really like no. See,
they're disappointed in him because he's.
Well, yeah. See, that's it. They're disappointed because what I love about Bobby Cannavale here is that they could have gone an entirely different way with his character. Been like, oh yeah, you like that, Lang? I'm screwing your ex-wife and taking care of your daughter, and I'll cop. Oh, how you like that? This character could have been a real asshole, but what they did with Cannavale is make him an honest character. They made him an honest person that. He's someone who generally cares for the well-being of Cassie and really cares for her safety, and also is generally in love with Maggie, but also feels for Scott and wants to see him succeed because he wants him to be a good influence and important part of his daughter's life. That's what I love about Bobby Cannavale in this movie. He's one of my favorite highlights, to be honest.
So he gets a visit from Hank Pym while he's sitting in jail, and Hank's like, look, you know, you got a choice. You can either go back to jail or you can, you know, wait until, you know, I come get you. And while he's sitting in the cell, of course, some ants bring him the suit. And he has to put it on real quick and escape, which he escapes from jail. Now he's a fugitive. But, of course, he's with Hank Pym, and he meets the daughter, Hope Van Dyne. And so they explain to him, look, you know, I made up this technology. I know it's dangerous. Now, this guy wants to replicate my work. And if he gets it out there, it's going to be a disaster. Now, I keep saying the same thing over and over because that's what they impress upon you. This gets out there, it's going to be a disaster. So, he's like, I want you to become Ant-Man so you can break into this place and steal this technology for me. And by doing this, you'll be helping your daughter, you'll be helping me, and I can help you. So, of course, there's conflict between him and Hank Pym's daughter, because Hank Pym's daughter doesn't believe in Scott Lang, thinks he's an idiot, and figures, I can do this on my own, but for some reason Hank Pym doesn't want his daughter to put the suit on. So now you gotta get Scott trained to work the Ant-Man costume. So he got to know how to shrink and grow, you know, to suit the situations. And he also has to learn how to control ants. And, you know, that's part of the powers is, you know, he has a technology that will allow him to communicate with ants. So, sort of like Aquaman talking to the fishies. Now, that is not a thing where, you know, you can hear what the ants are saying, but it's more like mind control. Would you agree with that, right, Jordan? More than anything else?
Yeah, I very much agree.
Yeah, it's
that.
Not like, yo, how are you, ant? Oh, I'm fine. No, it's like, you know, he sends out a signal that the ants will obey.
Yeah. It's just like, hey, you know, I need you. Hey, I was wondering if you could do something for me, and I'll do it. What I love is how they do bring across the relationship between whoever is wearing the suit and the ants. Like, I thought that correlation really played off here.
And, you know, they explain, you know, the different types of ants that can do different things, and that also ants are, you know, a lot stronger than the, you know, the size. Like, they're similar like Spider-Man, you know, the proportionate strength is a lot greater than what their size is. So, I mean, like, an ant couldn't pick up a person, but, you know, they can pick up what they need to move stuff around. And so, you know, that's why, you know, he can in an ant size knock somebody out or throw somebody, because he keeps his regular strength. So as Ant-Man, so he has to learn how to control the suit. He has to learn how to control the ants. And you know, like I said, the tension between him and Hope Van Dyne was growing. But now they need help, of course, because Corey Stahl's character, he's getting close to replicating this formula, and he's now nervous, so he wants to triple security so that nobody can get to it. And that's kind of a tip off that, you know, the villain kind of knows what's going on. He's not clueless as to what Hank is doing, but, you know, he's going to take his precautions. And so the few times we get Darren Cross throughout the movie, you know, his scenes, for the most part, overwhelming. It's him trying to rub it in Hank Pym's face that, yeah, I'm going to create this technology. I'm taking over your company. You didn't do nothing for me, but now I'm spitting in your face. Weak. Wouldn't you agree?
The writing with that character just wasn't strong enough. And honestly, I think good acting can overcome a bit of a weak script. But, and I know Stahl was really trying here. I generally love Corey Stahl. He's a wonderful actor. I love him in The Strain on FX and in Midnight in Paris as Ernest Hemingway. Probably my favorite thing about that movie. But it just doesn't really come across well. He's doing his best, but I think also the way of the direction of his character in delivering the lines and such didn't help. Didn't help that you know, with the script as well.
So, of course, they need help. So they go to Scott Lang's friends, played by Michael Peña, T.I. the rapper, and I don't know who this third guy is. He's
David Dasmalek.
I mean, he. If you see a lot of movies, you see him in movies.
He was Thomas Schiff, the guy that Joker got to be the setup in the shooting
he's been in
Commissioner Gordon at Commissioner Loeb's funeral.
Yeah, in Dark Knight. Yeah, so you'll recognize him when you see him in movies, but you know he's just not a.
You'll recognize A-lister. Him here by his Russian accent.
So you know they bring them in to plan this heist, and one of the cool things is in order to pull the heist, they need a piece of technology that Hank Pym invented a long time ago, but he no longer has his possession, and he figures it's just in an old Stark warehouse. But it turns out that old Stark warehouse is no longer an old Stark warehouse. It's now the home of the Avengers. So now getting in there is not going to be easy, and as soon as he arrives, he sets off an alarm, and he meets the Falcon, played by Anthony Mackie, who's now in his third appearance as the Falcon. He was in the Avengers Age of Ultron, and he made his first appearance in Captain America Winter Soldier. And now he's part of the new iteration of the Avengers following the end of Avengers Age of Ultron. So they meet, and like with all superhero movies and comic books, you know, sometimes when heroes meet, they don't understand each other, so they have to fight. And these two go at it because they don't know one another. And the Falcon doesn't know what
Lang's made of.
No, he doesn't know what Lang's after or what he wants. You know, Lang does try to explain it to him, but hey.
It's a typical thing of superhero comics. Yeah, they gotta fight it out.
And Scott shows that he's more than capable of using the suit to his advantage, and he does get the best of Falcon. And I don't think that he could do that every time, but in this case, he got the best of him, and he was able to get the device they needed to help them with this this break into the PIM facility and get this technology. So now that they got everything in place, one of the things you learn is some backstory on Hank Pym. And, you know, they do explain that he had a wife named Janet Devine, Janet Pym, but she's no longer around. And you're wondering why. And if you read comic books, you know that she's the Wasp. And it was a question whether she would show up, you know, whether Hope Van Dyne was going to be the Wasp, or whether she was really Janet Van Dyne. Before we saw the movie, nobody really knew. You know, they said she was the daughter, but that could have been throwing people off because, you know, sometimes they like to do that. So one of the better parts of the movie is getting the backstory of what happened to her. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I think the fight scene between those two is absolutely fantastic. I just wanted to go a little bit further on the fight scene in that it's fantastic and also very...
No, I'm talking about what happened with the Wasp.
Oh, yeah, the Wasp. I got confused for a second.
I'll explain it, then you can say what you got.
Janet Van Dyne's always been a favorite character of mine, and I like that we got to sort of see her.
Back
in the movie, I like the design, even though it was very much in the look, same vein of looking like Hank's, but it was very good.
Their design was similar in the beginning.
They both wore
red costumes. So, Hank explains to his daughter, you know, because the daughter doesn't understand, why won't you just let me put the suit on? Because I can do this and this clown can't. So he finally breaks down to her because, you know, when she was a child, when the mom disappears, he always told her, you know, the mom died in a plane accident. But what happened was Janet convinced Hank to let her go out and do these adventures together. So she became the Wasp. And they was trying to stop a ballistic missile from exploding, you know, a nuclear bomb. And they couldn't get into the bomb to defuse it. Now, one of the things they explain is you can't shrink but so far, because if you shrink too far down, you start to go subatomic. If you go subatomic, you'll never get out of that realm because everything stops. Time, space, reality, it all stops, you know, once you go subatomic. So they couldn't get into this. They couldn't get into this rocket, and Hank was going to sacrifice himself to get in, but he couldn't. So Janice did it herself. And one of the cool things was you saw her with the wings. She flew up, you know.
Oh, that made my heart a flutter.
So she went subatomic, got inside the bomb, stopped the bomb. But of course, once you do that, the suit kind of doesn't work, and you can't get out of it. So he's, you know, carried this pain ever since. You know, he kind of took it out of his daughter. Not that he punished her, but, you know, without his wife, he didn't know what to do with his daughter. He kind of shipped her off to boarding school, and she kind of had resentment of her father because, you know, he wasn't there for her. Because he shut part of himself off to get over his wife's disappearance. But
That was actually very well handled.
So he explains it to her finally, and it helps them, you know, kind of reconcile with their differences. You know, even though they were working together, they hadn't reconciled everything they've had between them because he wasn't totally honest with her, and all she wanted to know was the truth. So once that's out of the way, now everybody, they got the plan. And now Corey Starr, he's kind of solved the whole organic matter shrinking process. So now he's ready to unveil this and sell to the highest bidder. And so he invites Hank Pym to rub it in his face. He's like, you know, I'm going to show you, you know, you hurt me because I'm a big baby, but I'm going to prove to you I'm the better man. So now Scott goes on, you know, he has to get in. They discover a way of doing it, which is They go through the water main because that's the only thing that they can't put any kind of sensors in. You know, the water main goes in and out the building. Nothing you can do about it. If you can get the pressure down, you can sneak in that way. And that's how he gets in. Ants are helping him. He's controlling all the different ants. This is when the movie really gets great. Agree or disagree?
I think the movie gets great. It just gets great from there on. Because I think my absolute favorite highlight of this movie is the entire third act.
So, you know, they put the plan in motion of, you know, he's controlling the ants. They're putting bombs. They're destroying computers so they can, you know, stop this and stop that and destroying backups. Now, one of the things I liked is sometimes movies make the mistake of, it's a heist movie, right? So what they'll do is they'll show the plan. They'll explain the plan, but they'll show it being done. And then they're like, okay, so let's do it. So you've already seen it work perfectly. So then when they actually do the plan, you know something's going to go wrong. But they didn't do that here. They just showed the plan in motion. And, you know, at this point, Scott knows what he's doing, you know. And so the last thing to do is to get the actual suit itself. And that's kind of difficult because now Dan Cross, he's in the vault with the suit. Hank Pym's there. Some Hydra agents. You know, the government, everybody's like, you know, they're ready to buy. They, you know, this is what is going to... This is what they need, and you know, you can't do Marvel without Hydra.
No, you can't. So, hell Hydra at the end.
And it looks like everything's going right, but just when they're about to get the suit, turns out Darren Cross is waiting for him. So Scott Lang doesn't get the suit. Now he got everybody where he wants them. He got Ant-Man trapped. He got Hank Pym in the room. He got Janet in the room. And now all he wants to rub it in Hank Pym's face and kill him at the same time. A little over the top, but... So now Hank Pym has to save the day. He finds a way to get out of this trap. He, you know, now has to stop everybody from getting away. Hank Pym is injured. And while this is going on, like, the cops are outside because... They realized that Hank Pym was helping Scott Lang, and they wanted to get Scott Lang back because he escaped from jail. So they're outside trying to get into the building when all shit breaks loose. And one of the things you see is Scott Lang, you know, taking on the guards. And, you know, this is footage they made in a test footage before the movie was made to see how people would respond. But, you know, they improved on it. It's cool.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. It's also different in a way from how it's shot and setting. But, yeah, it's still very impressive.
You know, he's flipping over things. He's shrinking. He's throwing people. He's dodging bullets. He's just he's a badass at this point. So, you know, Corey Stahl, he's trying to get away with the Ant-Man suit because that's more important, you know. You get to see... Giant tanks grow because, you know, now that Hank Pym is shot and this building's about to blow up, they got to get out the building before it's too late. Scott Lang has to stop Corey Stahl, get the suit. That's the last thing he needs to do. He goes after him while, you know, he's trying to get away in a helicopter. Battle ensues and, you know, he's using his Ant-Man costume to beat up on the people in the helicopter. And then Hank Pym's building explodes. It kind of sucks itself into a... It doesn't really blow up. It kind of sucks itself into a pocket universe. That's what it looked like, right?
Oh, yeah. Most right. Definitely. That's what the quantum realm looked like. Microverse, but I'm pretty sure you can't say microverse.
No, you can say the microverse.
I'm going to say microverse because that's what I know it as. The microverse.
Microverse exists, and you know, even though they don't have the rights to the Micronauts where the Microverse started, they still could use the Microverse. It's just a smaller universe inside of a universe. So
it looked beautiful.
So now that the, you know, everything of the technology destroyed except for the suit itself, You know, Corey Starr puts the suit on because now he wants revenge, which sets up the fight between Ant-Man and Yellow Jacket. Their fight is probably one of the most creative fights in the Marvel Universe, Cinematic Universe, because you got the 2 6-inch figures fighting where everything else is normal size. So, you know, like they're fighting this, you know, they're inside of a briefcase and stuff is flying around them while they're fighting. They shrinking and growing and just, you know, as far as the battle is concerned. And Scott quickly gets the upper hand and it almost defeats Yellow Jacket, but then it's stopped by the police because they're after him. And they don't know what's going on. And they just know we got to take this guy back to jail. When they get the call that Scott's daughter's in trouble. And so Darren Cross, so determined to get back at Scott Lang, now is going to hurt his daughter, which would draw him out so he can hurt him. So now that leads to a second fight inside of his daughter's bedroom. And, you know, they're fighting on toys and trains. And it's lighthearted. It's funny. It's funny, yet it's still a real battle. You know, there's still danger stakes.
There's still some stakes, although admittedly not as high as many of the last few Marvel films, but it's still really good. And that's what I like about this movie, how kind of small scale it is.
And so eventually he figures the only way to defeat him is to destroy this suit from the inside. So Scott Lang goes subatomic to get inside the suit and destroy it, and now he's shrinking into the subatomic world, and he's going to be trapped because now the device which regulates the pin particles doesn't work. But Scott Lang figures out a way to reverse it so he can come back, because it wouldn't be a movie if he stayed trapped down there. So he gets out of this quantum universe and saves the day. Of course, now, you know, you have a happy ending. Scott's good with his family, good with his daughter, good with the ex-wife and everything. Not that he's getting back with her, but, you know, charges being dropped. Nobody's going to jail. Also, Hank Pym's, you know, he's grateful that, you know, now this is over with. And, you know, you got to have a little romance, so...
Hulk
seems to be hitting it off now, even though they were fighting each other throughout the movie, you know, romantic tension.
That just seems put in out of nowhere.
But, you know, when you're a superhero, you got to have romantic interest. Would you want to go out and kick ass if you didn't have a woman to hold you at night?
Oh, that's not a superhero thing. That's just the basic humanness.
No, but I'm saying, when you putting your life on the line, you need some loving at night. I mean, you need somebody to hold you. You know what? Why do you think villains are villains and not heroes? Because they have nobody to love them at night. So
not sure that was really.
You see anybody? You see anybody hugging on Doom at night?
Well, hey, hold on. Well, look, Doom chooses to be single because
no, he don't choose to be single.
Hold on. Doom ain't got no time for that. Doom has got a nation to run.
No, come on now. Doom is still, you know, Doom had a love in his life. He still has somebody he you know, he's fine over, so don't think that he ain't thinking about having some loving. You know? But villains don't get loving, so.
But that is not true. Go back and read Superior. Hey, go read Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Boomerang gets some love.
From who?
A bartender.
Oh, come on. That ain't the same. That's just some floozy pick up at a bar.
She becomes an actual character in the book.
But still, it's a bar floozy. Come on now.
Should also just read Superior Foes of Spider-Man, because that's an amazing comic.
That don't count. He's a D-list villain anyway, so.
Hey, D-list villain still needs love. Come on. Are you telling me Big Wheel doesn't need any loving?
I don't know who that is, but anyway.
Really? Big Wheel?
The only Big Wheel I know is the one I used to play with when I was a little kid. No, anyway, but so now that that's over, of course, you know, it ends with yeah, you know, he's looking for you. Okay, get some Easter eggs, talk about, and so, you know, that kind of leaves it open. You know, maybe join the Avengers or help the Avengers or help some people from the Avengers, because the Falcon's looking for him because he knows what he can do. And of course, credits roll. And you know, you should know better by now than to get up when the credits hit in a Marvel movie, because you're gonna get one to two post-credit scenes, mid-credit or post-credit scene, and you're doing this one. So the first one is Hank Pym explaining to the daughter that, you know, before the wife disappeared, they was working on an advanced wasp suit for her, but they never finished it. That the two of them can finish together, she can become the wasp. So we'll see her in the future as the wasp. I don't know how big of a role she'll have. Hopefully, you know, they'll give her some equal time in the next Ant-Man movie. Because, you know, sometimes the women roles aren't as full, unless you're the Black Widow. Second one is a scene that's going to be in Captain America Civil War. So it's kind of a setup where, if you've been following along, you know that Cap and Falcon is looking for the Winter Soldier. And in this scene, they kind of find him, but he's in trouble and they need help helping him. And Falcon tells Cap, well, they mentioned they can't go to Tony Stark because I guess the Civil War has started and they don't trust Tony. And Tony, you know, they don't know what his intentions are. So Falcon says, well, he knows a guy that can help him. And that's supposed to make you believe that, you know, they'll get Scott Lang's help. Now, did I miss anything?
No.
Do you have any anything you want to add?
Here are my two favorite things about this movie. Scott Lang and Hank Pym. I really think they got across the Ant-Man very well. I think Scott Lang is greatly hit on the head. Like, they got that character just absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
His regretfulness, his willingness to do good by his daughter, and his caring for others is very well shown nicely and brought across. And Hank Pym, I think Michael Douglas fit the script very well. I thought he gave a great performance.
You know, yeah, Michael Douglas, he's been in a long line of veteran actors and actresses. They've been able to get to do these movies now. You know, you go back to Guardians of the Galaxy, they got Glenn Close to star in that one.
Yeah, we got both Fatal Attraction stars now.
Yeah. You go Captain America,
Robert Redford. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones is in the first Captain America movie. You know, so a lot of veteran A-list movie actors and actresses are, you know, showing up to do roles. You know, everybody wants to be part of the Marvel Universe in some way or form. And I know you was happy to see your girl in this movie, right?
I'm gonna get to her in a second. I wanted to finish up my thing on the Pym on the Ant-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Really, what I love is that they also got across for Hank Pym. The two things I mentioned that really define his character, his regretfulness,
mm-hmm.
At the mistakes he's made, all over his entire history, and how they really make that work. I just really, really enjoyed that a lot. And Douglas brought that across nicely. He's able to really fit in, and really, he just really puts himself into the role, and fits into the MCU like a glove. He doesn't feel out of place at all. Now, speaking of Evangeline Lilly, this is the best she's been in a while because, one, she is not stuck with a love triangle that annoys the hell out of me and bogs down the story. She is not being put she's not being put into some bullshit, and I greatly appreciate that. She's actually allowed to be her own character, and I greatly love that. She actually worked very well. I like the chemistry between her and Lang and between her and Rudd, and especially her and Michael Douglas. And speaking of them and the Ant-Man, what I love was the parallel between Lang and Pym about reconnecting with their daughters. I love how they each had that same sort of mission and parallel with each other, in a way. That came across nicely. And one of my favorite scenes was Pym's admission of what had happened to Janet. It's very, very nicely done. And I thought, well handled.
Now, some of the Easter eggs in this, of course, we mentioned about the S.H.I.E.L.D. flashback with John Slattery, who was Howard Stark, and seeing Haley Atwell reprise her role as Peggy Carter. Michael Carlton, he played a character named Michael Donovan. Michael Carlton is a Pym villain played by, sorry, Martin Donovan.
Yeah, who was set to become
Mitchell Carson. Yes.
Martin Donovan plays Mitchell Carson, who was set to become the third Ant-Man. Was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, but that kind of got derailed by Eric O'Grady.
Now, when Scott Lang's out of jail, one of the places he's staying is called the Milgram Hotel.
Yep.
And that's named after Marvel artist Al Milgram, who did a 40-issue run on the West Coast Avengers, which Hank Pym was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
that was a nice little touch.
You know, they mentioned Tales to Astonish, which is the book that Hank Pym
debuted in.
They didn't mention his comic book, but, you know, somebody mentioned Tales to Astonish.
Yeah, Tales to Astonish, number 27, January 62.
And, some of the other, hold on. Come on, Paige. Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, of course, you get to meet Falcon, who's a new Avenger. And they show the Wasp, of course.
I got to say about that first post-credit scene, I love how that Wasp costume looked.
And, you know, Stan Lee makes his appearance.
Obligatory.
Right. And, Cassie Lang becomes Stature. And they mention that someone crossed walls, because now everybody knows that Spider-Man is going to show up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I've heard them say that when they mentioned it, they hadn't agreed to using Spider-Man yet. They just was throwing that in there. But, and of course, they mentioned, we know that Civil War is coming because of the second post-credit scenes.
I think one of my favorite Easter eggs was something
wait.
So...
Don't mention that.
You wanted to do it?
That's my job.
All right. That's my job. Go, surfer.
That's my job. Okay.
All right. I'm letting you do it.
Now, for all you old school people, there was an Easter egg most people wouldn't get. Okay? See, what you don't know is the truth, you know. For, you know, Hank Pym, he's a thief. And that's not saying because it's a movie. I'm saying he stole the Ant-Man idea from another guy. And I'm going to prove it to you right now. Just give me a second. Don't say anything, Jordan. Come on. I need a new PC. No. I knew it was going to happen to me. Oh, here we go. Dead air, people. Nothing like it. Come on, don't do this to me now.
There never will be.
Don't do this to me now.
So, do you want? Do you just want to explain it?
No. I got things that I want to do a certain way. So just let, you know, let me have my phone.
Well, this is going well.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks, little buddy, for believing in me.
Oh, you do the same to me and you know it.
Okay, round we go. So did you see Ant-Man yet?
Yes, I've seen Ant-Man.
Did you like Ant-Man?
I really liked Ant-Man.
Okay, here we go. No. Almost there. So did you see Ant-Man?
God, yes, I saw Ant-Man.
Did you see it in the movies?
I saw it in the movie theater with air conditioning.
Okay, I see what the problem is now. I see what the problem is.
Excuse me. I'm not sure if I remember your name. I'm really bad with names, you know.
You don't remember me? We met several times. It's Ant-Man. A-N-T-M-A-N.
Oh, right. Yeah. Ant-Man. Oh, yeah. What are your superpowers again? You talk to the ants, is that it?
Well, partly, but mainly I shrink myself down to the size of an ant while retaining my full human strength.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really impressive. Size of an ant with human strength. You must be able to clean house on those other ants. Hey, Hulk, hey. Check this guy out.
Ooh.
Got the strength of a human.
Ant-Man, huh? Where are your ants?
Guess.
They're at home, in the ant farm.
Oh, best stay out of this guy's way. Oh,
every molecule's quivering now.
I don't see what's so funny. Is there something wrong with being Ant-Man? I mean, what's the joke?
Great, Ant-Man.
Yes, people, the original Ant-Man.
Operatives aren't really dead.
What is that?
It's five of us against an army.
That doesn't sound impossible.
Oh, damn! What is that?
For our friends.
You've met your match.
Here they come!
Sorry about this, people. Browsers. Anyway, the original Ant-Man was in the movie too. Garrett Marsh, people, played the original Ant-Man in a skit of Saturday Night Live. If you ever want to look this up, and I know a lot of people didn't catch it. He was sitting in a car when Scott Lang fell out of a window and shrunk to regular size, grew to regular size. And Garrett Marsh was sitting in the car, didn't know what happened. Well, he was the original Ant-Man, people. If you ever want to see the skit, you can look it up on Hulu. Just type in Saturday Night Live, Superhero Party, and you'll see Garrett Marsh in the original Ant-Man suit, the bubble, clear bubble helmet and everything. See that? You didn't get that, people. I got it right away.
I got it.
I clapped. I knew exactly why he was sitting in that car.
I'm pretty sure I was one of the only few people that chuckled
at
that.
You looked it up later. Be honest.
No, I did not. Okay, do you think it's possible that I have seen some very old school Saturday Night Live?
You're too young.
And that I am aware of that sketch?
You're too young.
Really?
Yeah, you're just a young buck.
Shut up. No, look, I got the Garrett Morris cameo right away. I was like, holy shit, they're really pulling back, you know, for this one. And I like that. I was one of the only few people that audibly chuckled at it. They gave an audible response as to what had happened. So, yeah.
I don't know if I believe you, but I'll take your word for it. I'm glad you know your stuff, young Padawan.
Yeah.
I don't think you're too smart now. Now that we revealed that the best Easter egg of the movie, don't act like you knew and try to tell the people who didn't realize it, okay? Without giving us credit for
what, did I knew it before?
No, not you. I'm saying the people listening. The people.
Yeah, they better credit us.
Okay. Now I did see a video where the person interviewing Paul Rudd, he mentioned to Paul Rudd about Gap Morris, and they didn't say what it was. He just said, yeah, when I saw it, I got happy. And Paul Rudd said, well, I'm glad you realized why it was there. So, that's why Gap Morris made a cameo out of nowhere, because he played Ant-Man a long time ago for Saturday Night Live. So,
that was very nicely done. The only other thing I gotta say is, one of my other few things is like Scott's crew. Like, I like Michael Pena himself in the movie; he's a great highlight. But the whole crew
they were just clownish relief. That's all.
See, here's the thing: sometimes they're back and forth. Their comedic energy would be good, and I get a chuck out of them. But you know, then there'd be some times where their humor was just not that good.
I start to wonder if they were just there. So, because without them in the movie, it is kind of a homogenized movie without any diversity. So,
no, that's true. But I'd also say the movie was just I think the back it up bit in the third act when they were coming up outside of Scott's house. That was kind of unfunny. I was like, back it up, back it up. You know, I was like, okay, just tone it the hell down back then. But here's my last thing I want to mention about
the movie. You know, that was a tense scene, because they're trying to get to Scott at his house. But when they pull up, these are all criminals in a van. And this house they go into is surrounded by, like, dozens of police cars and policemen. So, You don't know how police are going to respond. You know, they see a van pull up and they know there's a dangerous situation. They could have just turned around and started shooting. So,
no, that's true. But I think it could have been slightly funnier instead of how it was. But again, the one last thing I wanted to bring up, my last point about this movie: the effects. Yeah, the effects are amazing.
The whole perspective of when he's shrunk down, you know, it's kind of incredible from the start, you know.
Yeah, no, it is. It's fantastic, really. What I love about this movie is how
and some of the de-aging process they used on different people.
Yeah, the look on young Michael Douglas impressed me. That was nice to see.
Yeah, he looked like Michael Douglas from the 80s.
Oh, it did. It very much did. Gordon Gekko brought back, people. I will say, the effects were amazing. The effects that help really show the shrinking and growing. It's like, you know, the outline of shadow, you know, the outline as it, you know, goes down. I really love that, because that's one of my favorite things in the comics. And really, it really showed off to a great extent. And they even did bring up one of the more fascinating things about the PIM particles is how it can cause some strain on people, the stress and mentally and physical it could take on someone.
Well, you know, the body's not meant to change size like that.
No, it's not. And I'm glad, again, I'm glad they, you know, properly showed that, I wish it was kind of done a little bit better with Corey Stoll's character, because again, that was kind of one of the weaker points of the movie.
Well, here's the thing with the these comic book movies, right? There's only three ways they can do it. The first way is to do that dual origin story of the villain and the hero at the same time, and a lot of times I find that to be distracting from the hero's story when you got to watch the villain develop at the same time.
Fair enough.
And then you could just, you know, do the hero and not really focus on the villain, which is fine, because you know, like villain origins was never important back in the day when they showed up in a comic book for the first time. It was just, all right, the Trapster's here. We got to stop him. You know, you didn't find out why he became the Trapster or what's his motivation or why he wants to trap people or steal banks, rob banks, anything like that. It was just, he's there and he got to be stopped. So, I don't have a problem if they do it that way so long as the villain is still a good villain. Then the third way is, like, in the case of Loki, okay, people think he's a great villain, but what they don't realize, he had more than one movie to develop. So, at this point, anytime he shows up, you already know his motivation. You know where he's coming from. You already learned about him. You don't have to be told who he is or what he's about. You know what he's there for. He's there to make throw his life miserable, anybody that's associated with him, and take over Asgard, and take over Earth, and so on and so forth. Okay? So those are the problems with villains. You know, it's either you focus on them and that takes away from the origin of the hero, or you don't focus on them, or you spend multiple movies focusing on them, and then you can get a better outcome out of them.
No, that's fair. That's fair enough. That's fair, in all honesty. But again, I guess I'm also just slightly disappointed because, given how much I do like Corey Stahl as a performer, uh-huh. and how I think he really could have done something, you know, with a character like Darren Cross himself. But again, I'll concede to your point. You bring up some very fair points about how they're doing this for movies, and how, honestly, I think it's been proven now television's a much better medium for adapting superheroes. In all honesty. But yeah, no. Overall, despite some of my problems and so, you know, with Stahl and some of the rockier parts of the script in terms of how some of the exposition was given and pacing, but that third act, I will say, is still my favorite thing about this movie. It is highly consistently entertaining and honestly gave me way more thrills than I expected from, say, something like Jurassic World this year. So, I'm gonna say Ant-Man is fantastic, it's wonderful, it's so much fun, and what I love about it is how much of a smaller scale, in all honesty, it is of a Marvel movie. We're not trying to save the world, we're trying to have a man who's trying to reconnect with his daughter and truly be a better person. And a father, and another father who's trying to do that as well. And I love that story. So, I'm going to give this about a 3.5 out of 5 anthills.
Anthills. That's a lot of ants.
Yeah. Hey, 3.5 out of 5 anthills.
No, I mean,
that's fine.
You got an anthill, you got a lot of ants.
Oh, no, yeah, that is true. So, those are my thoughts on Ant-Man.
Have you ever tasted an ant?
No, and I hope I never do.
You know, there are some ants you can eat.
I'm never gonna put an ant in my mouth.
See, you've never been a Boy Scout.
Hell no.
Because if at least when I was a Boy Scout, one of the things they would tell you about, you know, you can eat certain ants if you gotta survive out in the woods.
Thank goodness I wasn't a Boy Scout then.
Like, certain black ants you can eat if you have to. Like, certain ants you shouldn't eat at all.
Look, I was going to say, if I was a Boy Scout and I got to that part of, you know, in Boy Scouts, I just would have just suddenly just throw my hat down, turn to my stash, and like, fuck this.
I think I would rather eat an ant than a worm, but, or a mouse. If I had, you know, if I was being forced to eat something to survive. Because ants could be crunchy, you know?
They could, but
and
I got to
sound think like about you eat no ants now.
No, I'm not. I'm chewing ice. I got to think about ants. I had a bad experience with ants as a kid.
They picked on you?
Let's just say.
They beat you up?
Look, I don't hate all ants. Let me just say, I have a very, very, very deep hatred of fire ants.
Oh, those are the ants you can't eat.
Why can't you eat fire ants?
They're not edible. It's only certain black ants that are edible.
Okay, well, you know what? I'm done talking about edible ants, and I'm never going to eat ants.
Right, you can sprinkle some more ice cream. It'll be fine. And flying ants, they've always creeped me out. You know, because you get a lot of flying ants in Ant-Man. Because that's always been the main mode of transportation, is riding on the back of a flying ant. And I don't know if it's true or not, but, you know, we was always told that they were deadly if they bit you. So we used to run from them when we saw a flying ant.
Yeah, flying ants have always been a big thing, a big motif of the Ant-Man comics, so it's not surprising they're in this and featured so prominently.
And, you know, he names one called Antony.
That was just, yeah.
You know, and, you know, we could spend the next few minutes with a lot of ant puns, but we're not.
No, we, yeah. But why don't you give your final thoughts? I kind of just did my final thoughts.
Well, I've seen the movie twice. I can watch it over and over. I think it's a movie that gets stronger as it goes along. You know, you're not sure where the comedy is going to come from with this, because in the beginning it's okay, but you don't see a lot of funny things, and then it gets funny at the end. And of course, the action is. The action scene is one of the most creative ones. The effects is the most impressive thing about the movie. And you know, I think they done what they was trying to do, which was make Ant-Man a likable character. You know, like somebody that people would probably want to see again. Once you've seen it, because I have not known anybody to walk out and not like the movie. And if you are that person, then that's your problem. I got other problems to deal with than, you know, what movies you like and don't like. You know, maybe,
yeah.
Maybe if you don't like it, make your own movie. You know,
I'm trying to do that right now. But I do like Ant-Man,
and I hope in the next movie we do get some growing, you know, not just shrinkage, but, you know, see somebody go giant size once or twice, you know. That would be interesting to see.
Yeah. What would you give it out of five?
I don't give things out of fives. Okay.
Fine.
So we're gonna end it exactly right here.
As someone who loves bad puns, boo. Even I can't get behind that one.
It. Why?
Stop it.
Alright, so thanks for indulging us.
Thank you very much. You know where to find us. What Are You Reading Comic Book Show Facebook page. Go and like that. And we're on Twitter. At Jowoco. JOWOCO.
All right, until next time, take care. Peace.